ζυσόγουσα να γιουργιά. Дядя и жарья сугора, а ты же еще раз зауго.
What you are listening to is a 500-year-old eulogy of the Circassian Mamluks. It is commonly assumed that the Mamluks were Turkic slave soldiers, and true enough, the first iteration of the Mamluks, who from 1250 seized control of the Ayyubid Sultanate, were mostly Turks of Kipchak extraction, brought into the Muslim lands as slaves from the Pontic steppes via the Crimea. They were called Bahri Mamluks in reference to where they were garrisoned, on the island of Ar-Rawda on the Nile, Bahriya meaning of the river or sea. But the Genoese colonies on the Crimea traded not just in Turks, but also Circassians from the North Caucasus. These Burji Mamluks, so called because they were garrisoned in the towers of the citadel of Cairo, overthrew their Turkic masters in 1382, ushering in the Circassian Mamluk period. In 1516, at the meadow of Darbik, it was an entirely different Turkic soldiery, that of the Ottomans, that would clash with the Circassian Mamluks and deliver them the crushing defeat that is being recalled in this haunting eulogy. But why? Why is it that the once formidable Mamluk Sultanate collapsed before the Ottomans? Remember, it was the Mamluks, particularly during their Bahri iteration, who had been the scourge of the Mongols and the Frankish Crusaders alike, vanquishing the former at the monumental Battle of Ain Jalut in 1260, only 2 years after the same Mongol army had sacked Baghdad and murdered some 800,000 of its inhabitants. Although the Burji Mamluks presided over a far more tumultuous period than even their Bahri precursors, whose legendary status was eschewed at Ain Jalut, at their zenith, the Circassian sultans were, nonetheless, masters of Egypt, Libya, the Sudan, Syria, Palestine, Cilicia, Cyprus, Tihama, the Arabian coast from Aqaba to the Yemen, and parts of Anatolia and Iraq. And they had but a few decades prior to their collapse defeated the Ottoman Turks in two lengthy campaigns. So what went wrong? And more to the point, why is any of this relevant? In answering this question, how one Sunni superstate trampled over another, we will understand how the victorious party, the Ottomans in this instance, would themselves be trampled over in the coming centuries by the armies of Christendom, a pattern that would be repeated every time the Muslims clashed with the emergent West from the end of the 17th century onwards. And in analysing the causes, we will understand what role, if any, religion played in the demise of Islamic civilization, because if our opponents' claims are to be taken at face value, strict adherence to Islam causes Muslim societies to stagnate and lean backwards, whilst Western societies, freeing themselves from their religious shackles, thrusted them forwards and led to their emergence from the shadows of the Muslim superpowers that had once loomed large over them. The Mamluks governed a larger territory than the Ottomans, and one whose citizenry was predominantly Muslim and Arabic-speaking. The Circassians were the most capable and highly trained cavalrymen of the pre-modern era. Their horsemanship and chivalry, Furusiyya, was legendary, but their superiority in mounted combat was matched by their stubbornness when it came to modernizing their military overall. Even though the handgun, the arquebus, was seen in Mamluk territory before any other Muslim land, including that of the Ottomans, the Circassians loathed to dismount their steeds to join the infantry rank as lowly musketeers. Guns that could be shot from the hoof had yet to be invented. Those Mamluk sultans who did have the foresight to equip their soldiery with firearms faced mutiny. The sole gunpowder weapon-bearing force that the Mamluks could field was manned by Moroccans, Nubians, Persians and Turkomans, rather than Circassians, and was dispatched far to the southeast of the empire to face off the Portuguese threat. Before Bartolomeu Dias rounded the Cape of Good Hope in 1488, the Indian Ocean had been a veritable Muslim lake. Muslim navies, mercantile and military, could sail across its warm waters unmolested. Even the great armadas of the Ming Emperor Yongle and those of his successors were admiraled by a Muslim,
Zheng He,
the deft eunuch who, in the early 15th century, sailed his gigantic galleys from China to the coasts of Sumatra, Ceylon, Arabia and East Africa. But Vasco da Gama was no Zheng He. With the coming of the Portuguese came an oceanic reign of terror. The Catholic sea power began terrorizing Muslim waters, wrecking ports and pillaging pilgrim ships, burning the Hajj-bound crews on their boats and stealing anything of value they could. It was piracy on the high seas, the like of which the Ummah had never before seen. The Muslims of Gujarat and Yemen were particularly aggrieved and beseeched the Mamluks for help. The Portuguese even threatened the holy cities of Mecca and Medina, in a bid to steal away the body of the Prophet Muhammad to ransom it in exchange for Jerusalem. The blazing threat of the Portuguese navy was such that no believing monarch could ignore it. And so Sultan Qansu al-Ghawri, the penultimate Mamluk ruler, dispatched his lone regiment of musketeers away from the shores of the Mediterranean for the shores of Arabia, in order to defend the Haramain in the peninsula's near hinterland. These scenes are from Mamalik al-Nar, Kingdoms of Fire, a televisual retelling of the fall of the Mamluk Sultanate before the Ottomans. Arab media's answer to Turkey's Dirilish Ertuğrul series. If we can suspend our diligence for detail, including by pretending that the Ottoman Janissaries and Burji Mamluks, who were exclusively European, could be passed for by Egyptian actors, then this dramatization might assist us somewhat in our narrative. As the Kingdoms of Fire series is an unapologetically anti-Ottoman production, the portrayal of the future Sultan Selim as a Machiavellian prince, hell-bent on power, has obvious propaganda value. He starts out evil enough, as some kind of Damien child, taking sordid pleasure from murdering his little cousin. Selim's adult character hams it up further. He watches on dispassionately, after accidentally setting fire to his first and second-born sickly sons. With the unloved infants out of the way, Selim is made out to murder their poor, grief-stricken mother. He bitch slaps the only child he does like, Crown Prince Suleiman, the future Qanuni. He makes dog meat of his favourite horse, and is secretly assisted in his rise to power by Dr. Doom?
Huh?
But the demonization is unnecessary.
Because the reality is pretty crazy.
I mean, you don't need to hype it up any more than it really is.
Because there was sufficient grimness in the real biography of Selim I that Ottomans gave him that very title, Yavu Sultan Selim, Selim the Grim Sultan. He went to war with his father, forcing the old man's abdication. And in keeping with Mehmed the Conqueror's law of fratricide, Selim murdered his own brothers, cousins, and their children, although almost certainly not with his own hands.
Selim!
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 Not content with securing his empire from the rival Shiite power of Safavid Persia to his east, and seemingly uninterested in continuing the Ottoman tradition of Ghazawat, campaigning against the traditional Catholic enemy to his west, Selim instead set his sights on the possessions of his fellow Sunni Muslims.
حاشا لله إنما هم عصاة مرتكبون للكبائر ثم من أولى بي ثروات مصر وفارس والشام ثروات الشام من أولى فيها مجموعة شراكسة رعاة أم نحن رعاة يتمتعون بالثروات.
Thus it was that in 1516, while Qansu's musketeers were busy checking Catholic aggression in the Hijaz, Selim I made his move against the Mamluks.
سيرجموننا بالمدافع العملاقة. ساعتها لن تنفع أسلحتنا حتى لو كنا جاهزين.
أتتخاذل يا سيباي؟
روحي فداك يا مولاي. وشجاعتي في المعارك معلومة.
أثبت ذلك إذن.
لك هذا.
علان.
مولاي. أما كان على كورتباي؟ أن يكون لسيقا بخير.
لقد خاننا سيباي من قبل، أما خير فلم يبدر منه شيء.
مولاي،
يا سبحان الله، يفتيني جنودي بأرواحهم ويشكك في يقظتي. اذهب.
At the meadow of Dabiq, an area associated with Armageddon in Islamic eschatology, the two armies squared off.
لا تحزن يا صاحبي.
لست حزينا على حالي، ولكن على ما قد يحدث لنا.
أتشك في نصرنا؟
إنما أتذكر المثل المصري القديم، لا تعاند فتغلب حتى لو كنت السلطان.
أعلم أن منكم من يسأل نفسه، ولما نقاتل إخواننا في الدين؟ أقول لكم، هؤلاء هم البغاة الذين أمرنا رب العالمين بمحاربتهم. هؤلاء من نشروا الفساد وروعوا الآمنين. أما نحن فنحن المماليك، حماة الدين، حماة الأرض. أما لأعدائنا فأقول، يشق عليكم إن حملنا سيوفنا، حملنا ملاك الموت في كل مقبض. ألا فاذهبوا عنا، فإنا لقتلكم سعينا أسودا، ما لنا من مروضي.
عاش السلطان، عاش السلطان، عاش السلطان. السلطان عاش السلطان عاش السلطان عاش السلطان.
Even though they were outnumbered 3-1 and woefully unprepared to make tactical use of the guns they had haphazardly fielded, the Mamluks inflicted such heavy losses on the Ottomans that Selim considered retreating. But the Mamluks were betrayed by one of their own, the Circassian governor of Aleppo, Kher Beg, who had made a secret alliance with the Ottomans.
خادمكم المطيع خير بن ملباي.
أيعقل أن تأتي إلى هنا بنفسك؟
كما تراني يا سيدي. في نهاية الأمر المملكتان مملكة واحدة.
جئت تتحالف معنا إذن؟
نعم يا مولاي.
غامر أنت حقا يا خاير، غامر وطموح.
قد أكون مملوكاً يا مولاي، ولكنني ولدت وعشت حر.
تريدنا أن نسلطنك إذن؟
معاذ الله يا سلطان، معاذ الله، فأنا لا أليق أن أكون سلطاناً مثلك. تكفيني ولاية، كما أنكم ستحتاجون لمساعدتي لاجتياح دولة المماليك كاملة، وأنا ذا بين يديك أيها السلطان سليم، وسأقدم لك الكثير، لأني أتوقع منك الكثير.
عظيم لم يخسر المماليك حربا منذ مئات السنين، وبهم بسالة في الحرب يعرفها الجميع. هذا صحيح، لكن الحرب لا تربح بالشجاعة وحدها.
Although they had got the better of the Ottomans by noon, come the afternoon, the tide turned against the Mamluks as Kher Beg withdrew his forces, exposing Kansu's position to Ottoman cannons. The 75-year-old Sultan suffered a stroke, perhaps due to the shock of Kher's betrayal. He fell from his horse and died. With their Sultan dead, Mamluk morale collapsed, and the Ottomans at last secured victory. It was left to the last of the Mamluk Sultans, the popular and pious prince Al-Ashraf Abu Nasir, better known by his adopted name, Tuman Bey II, to muster what remaining forces he could for a Mamluk counterattack. Tuman Bey was a righteous man, much loved for his piety, leniency and justice. All in all, a very different ruler from his superstitious predecessor. He was initially reluctant to ascend to command, but his peers amongst the Circassian elite insisted. Perhaps he was as the one about whom Allah's Messenger sallallahu alayhi wa sallam said, وَتَجِدُونَ مِنْ خَيْرِ النَّاسِ أَشَدُّهُمْ كَرَاهِيَةً لِهَذَا الْأَمْرِ حَتَّى يَقَعَ فِيهِ. And you will find that the best of people are those who hate the responsibility of ruling most of all, until they find themselves forced into the role. With Syria in Ottoman hands following their victory at Marjdabik, Tuman Bey was inclined to accommodate Selim's appetite for conquest. The Mamluks had on occasion allied with the Ottomans after all. But the Mamluk war party got their way. And so, inevitably and almost reluctantly, Selim marched on Egypt. And Tuman Bey, as if compelled by a more just cause, stood his ground. But again, the unfortunate Circassians were betrayed by one of their own men. This time it was the governor of Hama, Jean Birdi al-Ghazali, who colluded with the Ottomans. Discouraging Tuman Bey away from a robust military strategy towards his own plan, the details of which he shared with the Ottoman Sultan.
ولكن عندما يقترب العثمانيون علينا أن نخرج من مدى المدافع لابد
ومتى سيكون انضمام قواتي؟
ستبقى هنا يا جان بردي تحمي مؤخرتنا وإذا التف العثمانيون خلف هذا الجبل أوقفت تقدمهم وحضرتنا
كما ترى يا مولاي
The two armies met at Raydaniya in Egypt in 1517.
أيها الرجال هذه لحظة حق وصدق حانت ساعة القتال نحن لا ندافع عن أرضنا وديارنا فحسب بل ندافع عن كلمة الله في وجه عدو غاشم فصابروا ورابطوا حتى يتحقق النصر
نحن فداء الإسلام
نحن فداء الإسلام
الله أكبر
الله أكبر الله أكبر
بسم الله
Even though they were heavily outnumbered and completely outgunned by the invaders, and further outmaneuvered thanks to Jan Birdi's betrayal, the Mamluks' fighting prowess was such that they again almost won the battle. Of the fighting, Tuman Bey cut his way right through to the Ottoman headquarters, where he killed their Grand Vizier, the Bosnian eunuch Sinan Pasha Borovanich, thinking he had killed Selim himself. But on this occasion, Selim had been in the open field. Tuman Bey was therefore denied from dealing what might have otherwise been a decisive killer blow. with Ottoman artillery instead brought to bear on the exposed Circassian defenders. Just as Tuman Bey Feed might happen, were his own strategy not followed, the battle ultimately concluded with their routing for the second time in as many years, avenging the Turks' previous defeats in Anatolia. The Ottomans swallowed the Mamluk kingdom whole, turning their empire into a Muslim-majority project overnight. Tuman Bey continued to resist for some months, until he was personally betrayed by a Bedouin chief whose life he had previously saved. Selim rewarded Janbirdi with the governorship of Damascus, but he rebelled upon the ascension of Suleiman the Magnificent. The new Ottoman Sultan crushed the rebellion and received Janbirdi's severed head as a memento.
Mubarakun laka al-Nasru ya Badishah.
Sa'adtana anta ya Janbirdi. Sa'adtana anta wa khayr fil wusul ila al-Qahira.
كان هذا بفضل عزيمتك وقوتك وأنا لا أطلب إلى أن أكون أنا وجندي تحت رايتك
لك هذا وعندما أقبض على ذاك الجباني الفار سوف أضع أحدكما مكانه.
As for Khair Beg, he was made governor of Egypt, where his rule was characterized by cruelty. The people of Egypt called their new governor Khain Beg, Traitor Beg. In many ways, the Mamluk Sultanate was already on its knees, even before the Ottomans turned up. Circassian rule in the Near East was punctuated by wave after wave of disasters, some natural, others man-made. There had been over 30 plague epidemics and droughts resulting in depopulation and displacement. In between these acts of God, in 1400 came acts of the devil in the guise of Timur Lang, aka Tamerlane, the scourge of the earth, the last of the great Mongol conquerors. The merciless warlord decimated Syria and thinned out its population. He caused such destruction that even the dome of the Umayyad mosque caved in. After Timur came again the drought, followed by further famine, which diminished agricultural production and wiped out a large proportion of the peasantry and swathes of skilled workers and domestic animals. With the deaths of so many, industry collapsed, the economic underpinnings of the state faltered, and the Mamluks no longer had sufficient resources to maintain their military organization. Even Arab Bedouin were left to run amok, raiding deep into coastal towns. We cannot blame the Mamluks for the above, but we can blame them for how they reacted. Firstly, from their earliest entry onto the scene, the Circassian Mamluks would preoccupy themselves with games for the throne, bankrupting the treasury due to expenditure on military resources and through buying the allegiance of soldiers. In this way, loyalty was never permanently earned, but temporarily purchased through bribes and backhanders. As one chronicler noted, the Circassians were a race of handsome stature, uncannily brave and chivalrous, but bravery alone is not enough to maintain an empire, and they were blighted by their desire for power, so much so that none could satisfy himself with the rule of another. The Prophet ﷺ said, "Indeed, by Allah, we do not assign this matter of leadership to the one who asks for it, nor to the one who covets it." And as he, sallallahu alayhi wasallam, warned his ummah, "You will covet rule, but it will become a thing of regret on the day of resurrection. How excellent a wet nurse it is, and how evil a weaning it is." And as regards bribery, such as that which bookended each Mamluk ascension to the throne, the companion, Abdullah ibn Amr radiallahu anhu, related, "La'ana Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa sallam al-rashiya wal-murtashi." Allah's Messenger cursed the one who bribes and the one who takes a bribe. Secondly, the Mamluks encouraged a racist stratification of the society they governed, keeping themselves aloof from the wider populace they were duty-bound to serve, venturing amongst them only to take from them.
لماذا تعاملون بهذه الطريقة؟ ما ذنبهم إن لم يكونوا فرسانا؟
لأني لست مضطرا أن أتحمل الرعاة.
The Mamluk kingdom had become extremely wealthy from its near monopoly on east-west maritime trade, allowing it to impose very high taxes and tariffs on the produce that passed through its waters. But when the Portuguese circumvented the Mamluks, literally and figuratively, they snatched the spice trade away from them and left their treasury emptied as a result. The Mamluks made up for their shortfall in international revenue by overtaxing the farmers under their protection. The exorbitant taxes caused hyperinflation as well as popular indignation. The farming communities left the rural areas for the cities, leaving the agricultural lands to erode, further diminishing the food security of the masses and the productivity of the country. Egypt's harbors were also ruined through crushing taxation and extortion. As for Syria, its townsfolk were harangued whenever the Mamluks ventured beyond their garrisons and into the cities. These ruinous policies, whilst impoverishing the society at large, had little direct short-term effect on the Circassians who lived apart from them, hoarding grains and cereals for themselves. The Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam said, لا يختكر إلا خاطئ. No one hoards except a crook. All this led to instability and fueled corruption, which further accelerated the economic decay and the oppression of the weakest sections of society. Being a warrior caste, the Mamluks were always of a higher class than the common people, even as freed slaves, but to further squeeze the native population after their having already been subjected to hardships was reminiscent of the cruelty and exploitative rule of Pharaoh and his people in the same lands many epochs earlier.
إن فرعون علا في الأرض وجعل أهلها شيعا يستضعف طائفة منهم.
Verily Pharaoh exalted himself in the land and made his people into sects, weakening and oppressing a group among them. And this is in diametric opposition to the sentiment of compassion for the downtrodden as expressed throughout the Sunnah. The Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam said, أبغوني ذعفاءكم فإنما ترزقون وتنصرون بذعفائكم. Seek out for me your weak ones, for you only receive sustenance and victory through your weak ones. The way in which the Mamluk elites effectively compounded the suffering of their subjects, reeling from one disaster to another, was at great variance not only with the Islamic spirit, but also with how Europe's Christians would often deal with such crises, a trait for which they were praised in the Sunnah, when the companion Mustawrid bin Shaddad related to Amr bin al-As that the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam said, تقوم الساعة والروم أكثر الناس. The last hour will come when the Romans will form the majority of people. Amr said to Mustawrid, أبصر ما تقول. Watch what you say. Mustawrid said, أقول ما سمعت من رسول الله sallallahu alaihi wasallam. I only say what I heard from Allah's Messenger sallallahu alaihi wasallam. Thereupon Amr said, لَإِن قُلْتَ ذَلِكَ إِنَّ فِيهِمْ لَخِصَالٍ أَرْبَعَ. If you say that this is actually what the Prophet said, then it is due to four qualities in them. إِنَّهُمْ لَأَحْلَمُ النَّاسِ عِنْدَ الْفِتْنَةِ. They are the most forbearing of people with tribulation. وَأَسْرَعَهُمْ إِفَاكَةً بَعْدَ مُصِيبَةٍ. And they are the swiftest to compose themselves after a calamity. وَأَوْشَكُهُمْ كَرَّةً بَعْدَ فَرَّةٍ. They are the most eager to regroup after flight. وَخَيْرُهُمْ لِمَسَاكِينٍ وَيَتِيمٍ وَضَعِيفٍ. And they are the best to the destitute, orphans and the weak. وَخَامِسَةٌ حَسْنَةٌ جَمِيلَةٌ وَأَمْنَعُهُمْ مِنْ ذُلْمِ الْمُلُوكِ. And they have a fifth quality, good and beautiful. They prevent the oppression of kings.
قُلْ لِي مَا هُوَ عَمَلُكَ. رَمْلِي يُنْبِئُنِي أَمْرَ الْغَيْبِ بِحَوْلِ اللَّهِ. أخبرني.
Thirdly, it is one thing for a king to oppress those over whom he has charge, but to oppress the one who has charge over all kings is another matter entirely. It is from Allah's rights that he be worshipped in his oneness, including by seeking assistance and aid from him, by trusting that the fate and fortunes of men is in his hands, and that he alone, Most High, has knowledge and power over future events. Sultan Qansu usurped these rights of Allah by delving into the shirk of divination and astrology.
إني أرى حزنا وشرا عظيما قادمين ستحزن وتبكي طويلا يا مولاي.
He would consult soothsayers, believing in horoscopes, the reading of sand, and the mystical interpretation of letters and symbols.
ستموت فارسا يذود عن قلعته.
يا أيها الذين آمنوا إن إنما الخمر والميسر والأنصاب والأزلام رجس من عمل الشيطان فاجتنبوه لعلكم تفلحون.
O you who believe, indeed intoxicants, gambling, sacrificing on stone altars and divination are but defilement from the work of Satan, so avoid them that you may be successful. And as regards astrology specifically, the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam said, "Man iqtabasa ilman min an-najum iqtabasa shu'batan min as-sihr zada ma zad." Whoever acquires any knowledge of astrology acquires a branch of magic. He increases as much as he increases, meaning he increases in the sin and disbelief of magic as he increases in his acquisition of astrology. And after one rainy night, following the morning prayer, the Prophet asked his companions, هَلْ تَدْرُونَ مَاذَا قَالَ رَبُّكُمْ? Do you know what your Lord has said, what he has revealed? قَالُوا اللَّهُ وَرَسُولُهُ أَعْلَمُ. They said, Allah and his messenger know better. قَالْ أَسْبَحَ مِنْ عِبَادِي مُؤْمِنًا بِهِ وَكَافِرًا. He, Allah, said, this morning some of my slaves remained as true believers and some became disbelievers. فَأَمَّا مَنْ قَالْ مُتِرْنَا بِفَضْلِ اللَّهِ وَرَحْمَتِهِ فَذَلِكَ مُؤْمِنٌ بِهِ كَافِرٌ بِالْكَوْكَبِ. Whoever said, it rained upon us by the grace and mercy of Allah, then he believed in me and disbelieved in the stars. وَأَمَّا مَنْ قَالْ بِنَوِي كَذَا وَكَذَا فَذَلِكَ كَافِرٌ بِهِ مُؤْمِنٌ بِالْكَوْكَبِ. And whoever says, it rained due to a particular star, then such a person disbelieves in me and believes in that star. As for the fatwa Salim extracted to greenlight his quote-unquote jihad against the Mamluks, it was highly disingenuous. The Sultan had his clerics accuse the Mamluks of entertaining an alliance with Shiite Safavid Persia. However, the truth was, as honorary Egyptians, the Mamluks presided over a populace that had no love lost when it came to Shiism. Under the Fatimids, Shiism had been tried, tested, and roundly rejected by Egyptian society, crushed as the Fatimids were by Salahuddin al-Ayyubi, much to the disgust of at least one salty Fatimid fanboy.
ايه نستفيد هو صلاح الدين ايه غير اللي احنا شفناه مش هو ده الناصر صلاح الدين هو اللي راح عالج ريتشارد قلب الاسد ووقف قدام الصليبيين مش هو ده
لا صلاح الدين واحد من احقر الشخصيات في التاريخ الانساني
احقر الشخصيات في التاريخ الانساني
عملت لك منشطة عشان بكره بقى هتطلع
لا مش منشطة انا بتعلم من
By contrast, Ottoman Janissaries were initiated into a Shiite Sufi order, the Bektashi, who believed in a trinity, that Allah, the Prophet Muhammad, and his cousin Ali were all one divine light, a heresy that strayed far too far even for other Sufi tariqas, who at least paid lip service to Sunni Islam. Salim's fatwa was therefore a fugazi. As far as he was concerned, the wealth to be gained from the Mamluk domains made war against fellow Muslims worthwhile. The rights and wrongs of Ottoman expansionism into Muslim lands aside, the Mamluks' protest against the use of firearms made for a sorry defence in refusing to adopt the weapons and technology of the time. They allow their Ottoman and Portuguese rivals to leapfrog over them in the machinery of war. To borrow from one English historian, the Mamluks were romantic, but wrong. The Ottomans were repulsive, but right. Or as one Frenchman who witnessed the suicidal charge of the Light Brigade at Balaclava exclaimed, C'est magnifique, mais je n'ai pas la guerre, c'est de la folie. It is magnificent, but it is not war, it is madness. In the following revealing dialogue, we see how tragically mistaken the Circassians were in their understanding of what it meant to remain steadfast upon the Sunnah in the ways of war. Beaten at Raydaniya, the high-ranking Circassian prince, Kurt Bey, now a captive of Salim, defiantly countered the Ottoman emperor to his face, saying, A single one of us can defeat your whole army. If you do not believe it, you may try. Only order your army to stop shooting with firearms. You have here with you 200,000 soldiers of all races. Remain in your place and array your army. Only three of us will come out against you. I, the slave of Allah, the charging knight, Sultan Tumanbe, and Prince Alan, and you will see with your own eyes the feats performed by these three. Moreover, you will then know your own self whether you are a king or deserve to be a king, because kingship befits only he who is gallant and experienced. For such were our Salaf al-Saleh, our pious predecessors, radiallahu anhum, Allah be pleased with them. Look into history to learn of the bravery of the Imam Umar ibn al-Khattab, radiallahu ta'ala anhu, Allah Most High be pleased with him, and the Imam Ali bin Abi Talib, radiallahu anhu, wa karramallahu wajhahu, Allah be pleased with him and ennoble his face. As for you, you have patched up an army from all parts of the world, Christians, Greeks, and others besides, and you have brought with you this contrivance artfully devised by the Christians of Europe when they were incapable of meeting the Muslim armies in battle.
رأيت يونس أغر؟
نعم يا مولاي.
سلاح جديد.
وحدك.
That contrivance, continues Kurtbey, is the gun, which, even if a woman were to fire it, would hold up such and such a number of men. Had we chosen to employ this weapon, you would not have preceded us in its use. But we are the people who do not discard the sunnah of our Prophet Muhammad. And woe to you! How dare you shoot with firearms at those who testify to the oneness of Allah and to the messengership of Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa sallam? Salim responded, If bravery, brave men and knights had been amongst you, and you had been upon the book and the sunnah as you claim, then how have we defeated you and expelled you from your country and enslaved your children and annihilated most of you? And why are you yourself my prisoner? Kurtbey retorted, By Allah, you have not conquered my country by your power or horsemanship. This was but a thing ordained and predestined by Allah Ta'ala from eternity. For Allah has created for everything a beginning, and for every beginning an end, and every kingdom has a fixed period of time and an allotted portion. This is Allah's custom with His creation. Glorified be He. Where are the industrious leaders? Where are the kings and the sultans? You yourself will die and abide by this order. And I reckon you are from those about whom Allah Ta'ala said,
سَنَسْتَدْرِجُهُمْ مِنْ حَيْثُ لَا يَعْلَمُونَ وَأُمْلِي لَهُمْ إِنَّ كَيْدِي مَتِينٌ
We shall punish them in stages from directions they do not perceive, and I will grant them a respite. Verily, my plan is strong. Tuman Bey voiced a similar objection to Salim. We are all Muslims, protested the Mamluk Sultan to his Ottoman counterpart. So how is it that you make lawful the killing of Muslims? And how can you fire on them with these cannons and firearms? What would you do if you stood before the Lord of the Worlds? And what would be your answer? Every king, however great his kingdom, is but a lowly slave before Allah. You and I are no more than slaves. One may well ask how such an otherwise reasonable, noble and God-fearing king as this could end up losing his empire in a war he loathed to fight against an unnatural enemy of fellow Muslims. It is not as if Salim's original asks were unreasonable, such that he and Tuman Bey might have come to terms. The Turkish conqueror appeared inclined to leave at least Africa in his Circassian rival's capable hands. But the treacherous Kherbek would keep turning the Turk in the opposite direction until the best of the Mamluks were liquidated thanks to his beguiling and cunning plots. The Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam said, On the day of resurrection, for every traitor, there will be a banner which will be raised in proportion to his treachery. Truly, no treason is more serious than that committed by a leader of people.
لا خير لحياتي ونصف قومي قد مات والنصف الآخر قد خان من أخدع نفسه هذه نهاية المماليك
تقدموا لا بطولة في قتل الناس
المهم هو الانتصار بأي طريقة كانت
قتل الأبرياء العزل عمل وضيع لا يقوم به إلا خسيس
الخسيس هو من يتكلم بما لا يليق بحاله ألم تكفك الهزيمة؟
بالخيانة
الهزيمة
سمعتك
ألم تكفك؟
أصدقت أنك انتصرت بشجاعتك؟
لولا الخيانة لما وصلنا إلى ما وصلنا إليه.
لما خن يا تومان، لما خن. تحالفت مع من سيحمي الإسلام.
عاش السلطان سليم!
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 أسمعت؟ انضم للمنتصر.
لي
أنا السلطان سليم ابن عثمان، وسأجعلك تحكم مصر باسمي. ما رأيك؟
من أنت لتنصب نفسك سلطانا وتختار حاكما على مصر؟ أنت لا تملك.
مبلغ علمي أنك لا تملك أيضا.
ما أنت إلا محتل، وهكذا سيكون اسمك دائما.
وما أنت إلا مهزوم، وسيكون اسمك هكذا دائما.
سنرى.
تومان باي الأمير المهزوم، فليسجل التاريخ.
التاريخ سيسجل أنك وضعت السم لأبيك وقتلت إخوتك.
فليسجل.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين، الرحمن الرحيم، مالك يوم الدين، إياك نعبد وإياك نستعين، اهدنا الصراط المستقيم، صراط الذين أنعمت عليهم غير المغضوب عليهم ولا الضالين.
ما شغلك؟
أشهد أن لا إله إلا الله وأن محمدا رسول الله.
When all was said and done, Selim the Grim executed Tumam Bey the Just and hung his slain body on Bab Zawaila, Cairo's city gate, while his Ottoman troops pillaged the city for 3 days. And when it finally dawned on Selim that he had been played all along, and that the best men who could have governed Egypt on behalf of the Ottomans were now slain, Selim snarled at Kherbek, "You tricked me and goaded me with envy into taking this region. So look how to make do and manage yourself according to how you know, or else on your head be it." Had cooler heads prevailed, and more sincere hearts not been deceived, perhaps war could have been avoided. But such is history. What was meant to be came to pass. And as heartbreaking as such conflicts are, it is not as if the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam, the truthful one, did not warn us when he said, سَأَلْتُ رَبِّي ثَلَاثًا فَأَعْتَانِي ثِنْتَيْنِ وَمَنْعَنِي وَاحِدًا. I asked my Lord for 3. He granted me 2 and withheld 1. I asked my Lord that my Ummah not be destroyed due to famine, and he granted me this. And I asked him that my Ummah not be destroyed due to drowning, and he granted me this.
وَسَأَلْتُهُ أَنْ لَا يَجْعَلَ بَعْسَهُمْ بَيْنُهُمْ فَمَنَعَنِهَا.
And I asked him that there should not be any enmity, any bloodshed amongst my Ummah, but he withheld this from me. This hadith first came to pass in the lifetimes of some of the companions, when they lived to see civil war break out amongst them, all due to the infiltration of hypocrites and deviants into their community. So if evil men could weave their evil in the ranks of the disciples of Allah's apostles, should it really surprise us that later generations of believers, no less believers of disparate lands, cultures and languages, would fall victim to the plots and plans of the wicked, and with Allah refuge is sought?
With all that being said, it is fair to conclude that the Mamluks were defeated through a series of betrayals, which allowed the Ottomans to fully exploit their superior arms and greater numbers at the most critical junctures during the hostilities.
اقتربنا من القاهرة. لولا خير بيك لتهنا في الصحراء أو وقعنا في براثن الحاميات المملوكية.
The populations that the hapless Circassians governed and the soldiers who made up their ranks had already been massively reduced through plague, famine and attrition. The civil infrastructure and the economy that underpinned the Mamluk military machine already having been exhausted. All the above happened. But we can also now appreciate why. Why Allah might have allowed the reduction of the Mamluks even whilst they were the guardians of the holy sites and not the aggressors in their wars with the Turks. And so it is that for the demise of each and every Muslim power, we can trace a spiritual malaise and a defiance of Allah's just laws to underwrite the material and naturalistic explanations. This is the sunnah of Allah with his creation. When they remain steadfast and sincere, dutiful and grateful, he grants them establishment in the earth. But when they turn away from him and the teachings of his prophets and messengers, he lifts his grace from them and allows humiliation to be unleashed upon them.
استكبارا في الأرض ومكر السيء ولا يحيق المكر السيء إلا بأهله فهل ينظرون إلا سنة الأولين فلن تجد لسنة الله تبديلا ولن تجد لسنة الله تحويلا.
Behaving arrogantly in the land and plotting evil, but the evil plotting closes only him who makes it, then can they expect anything else but the sunnah of dealing with the people of old? No substitution will you find in Allah's sunnah, and no change will you find in Allah's sunnah. And as for the innocent amongst those afflicted, it may be that he, most wise and merciful, wishes good for a people's hereafter by putting them to trial in this world, expiating their sins in this life so they need not be held to account for them in the next. As he, the glorified and exalted, said,
أَحَسِبَ النَّاسُ أَن يُتْرَكُوا أَن يَقُولُوا آمَنَّا وَهُمْ لَا يُفْتَنُونَ وَلَقَدْ فَتَنَّ الَّذِينَ مِنْ قَبْلِهِمْ فَلَيَعْلَمَنَّ اللَّهُ الَّذِينَ صَدَقُوا وَلَيَعْلَمَنَّ الْكَاذِبِينَ.
Do people think that they will be left alone because they say we believe and they will not be tested? And we indeed tested those who were before them, and Allah will certainly make known those who are true, and will certainly make known those who are liars.
Sadiqur az jeri, terkuz jam, ya hajam nifazi.